This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Welcome. We're talking on Keeping the Faith this afternoon with Don Mason from Ghost Ranch in New Mexico. Don, can you hear me all right?
Yes, I can. Good afternoon, Steve.
Well, thank you for giving us some of your time from that conference center. About a year ago on this program, we had, I think, my first in 10 years program dealing with the camps and conferences that go on so many places in various religious traditions during the summertime. And we had such a good response to that. That was a Unitarian sailing camp for teenagers that I wanted to do it again. And Ghost Ranch is a conference center that you've gone to for how many years as either teacher or attender?
The last 11 years, I've been coming back about every summer. 11 years ago, I had the opportunity to spend a month here as a chaplain when I was on a sabbatical leave. And that kind of got me hooked, and I've been coming back pretty much every year since then to lead a hiking group that did faith sharing as well. We called it Walking on Holy Ground.
Now tell us, what's the appeal of a place like Ghost Ranch? Or maybe there's very few places actually like Ghost Ranch, but tell us what's special about it.
Well, it does have an extraordinary beauty that people have found compelling. Artists and theologians and people from many walks of life alike. Some people say it's more than a place, though. It's there's something about nourishment for the soul that we experience on the high desert out here in a very remote place without a lot of technology. And I'm sure there are other places like this, but again and again I hear people say there's something magical or special about this landscape and this environment, this focus on the faith in the context of such a beautiful setting and a respect for all people who come here.
Now, you have taught other courses. You talked about the hiking course that also deals with faith sharing, but what are some of the other courses that you personally have taught there?
Well, that's pretty much it. I was responsible for the liturgy when I was chaplain. We had meditation before breakfast. We had intergenerational worship after breakfast outside. And on Sunday, we had Eucharistic worship, utilizing some of the special people that are here at the time. But what has brought me back generally has been 1 week. The 4 weeks I was chaplain here, I had experiences with the state historian of New Mexico, 1 week with a legendary early pioneer at Ghost Ranch, Jim Shibley, the ranch lands manager on Legends of Ghost Ranch, 1 week. And then 2 weeks with a man named John Hayden, who's a retired forestry, National Forest Ranger, and together we made kind of an unusual team of his. He's kind of a Baptist, evangelical Christian, and I come from a more mainline liberal experience with the Presbyterian Church, and the two of us have seemed to make a pretty good team for helping people focus on life issues as they were arising at that time.
We may be inviting listeners later to share their experiences at various camps and conference centers around the country or around the world, in fact. But often it's those relationships, like the one you just talked about, the ones you just talked about, that are most memorable.
You know, there's a leader here this week, J. Philip Newell, that is from Scotland. It kind of takes us back to our roots in the Reformed tradition, back to the Church of Scotland. He's been focused primarily in Iona, and he comes here now. This is, I think, the third year where he comes for an entire month, and using his unique ability with taking the ancient wisdom of Scripture and the tradition and turning it into contemporary words that relate to the oneness of humanity with the earth and with God that I found quite compelling. And I'm not alone that there are, you know, where we usually might have 8 or 10 for the prayers before breakfast, we now have about 50 as he leads the liturgy. And on Friday evening of last week, we had what's a ritual now every Friday night. It's night prayer after dark around a fire, and with him leading the chanting in his very gentle way. That's another example of the kind of leadership that we're experiencing right at this time.
And, oh, the gatherings around the fire at camps all over these days in the summer for kids and adults. You mentioned the artists who found that particular location very appealing. And, of course, the most notable is Georgia O'Keeffe, who lived right there at Ghost Ranch for, what, 40 years or something?
Yes, I think 50.
50, yeah.
So she definitely made an impact on this region of New Mexico, and it's not uncommon. My volunteer work here now has me answering a lot of questions at the front desk, and it's not uncommon for people to come in and ask, is this the Georgia O'Keeffe Ranch? And where did she live? And not realizing that it has anything at all to do with the Presbyterian Church.
She was an artist, of course, from the Midwest originally, Wisconsin, and studied at the Art Institute and then went to New York and made quite a name for herself there. But then over her long 98 years of life, spent, as you say, 40 or 50 years there in New Mexico, and many of her paintings that are most in galleries all over the world are of things that one can see there at Ghost Ranch.
Yes, she appreciated the landscape here so much that she left New York, and it was around the time of Arthur Stieglitz, her husband's, death. And she first came out just for the summers, and then she relocated here permanently. And there is a Georgia O'Keeffe Museum in Santa Fe that many art people come there, and then they want to do an O'Keeffe tour, and they come to Abiquiu, where she had a home year-round. That's 14 miles from where we are here. And then they come on up here we offer a landscape tour that takes people not into the house where she lived here, because it doesn't belong to Ghost Ranch. That's another story. But all around the landscape, and we stop at the places where she obviously did certain of her most well-known works. And people that wish get out of the 14-passenger bus, or 15-passenger bus, I guess it is, and if they want to take pictures or walk around a bit. At the same time, we offer horseback tours of that same area. And to my amazement, since that's part of what I do, is sign people up for that tour, it's booked solid weeks in advance, time and again. Not every time, but many times.
Well, so she was such a notable artist for her time, and I've appreciated her work over the years and learning more about her and Stieglitz. It's a fascinating story. She really took the American styles of painting around the world rather than vice versa, which was fascinating.
One interesting thing about her life is she was helped in her later years by a man named Juan Hamilton, who, as it turns out, attended the same college at the same time that I did. He was my college classmate in Hastings, Nebraska, where I went to college. And I was quite surprised that Bruce Hamilton turned out to be the Juan Hamilton of Ghost Ranch, who was so important in her later years as she experienced macular degeneration and faced a lot of challenges. He was her companion and support and business manager. And when she died, she left everything to him. So he and his family inherited her home, the one that's here on the ranch, that she had eventually had bought. She came here when it was a dude ranch, before the church had any part of it. And then she continued to live there after the Presbyterians moved in 1955.
And I might tell listeners that if you want to get some views on your computer, you can just go to ghostranch.org and you'll see some wonderful photographs of some of the scenes that Don Mason, our guest today, has been talking about and leads folks around to see when they're actually out in New Mexico. Abiquiu is close to Santa Fe. Abiquiu is spelled A-B-I-Q-U-I-U. Abiquiu, New Mexico, is the closest small town to Ghost Ranch, but neither are far from Santa Fe. Let me encourage listeners to do give us a call if you have questions about comments made by our guest today, or if you'd like to make some comments or perhaps share a memory of a camp or conference experience in your history, in your religious tradition, or perhaps a spiritual experience at a outdoor setting at a camp or conference somewhere in your past. That would be fine. Do give us a call. 333-9455 is the number in Champaign-Urbana where this program originates. But if you're listening and it's a long-distance call, use 1-800-222-9455. And that includes listeners on the Internet anywhere in the continental U.S., 1-800-222-9455. Back to our guest, Don Mason, who has been for 11 years out at Ghost Ranch, a part of each summer, and you're going to be there all this summer. Is that correct, Don?
We're here for a seven-month commitment.
7 months, you and your wife, Donna. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for giving us an hour talking into a phone rather than being out in the beautiful scenery.
Well, actually, I'm on a work day today. I've been in the office here at the front desk all day, and I just stepped across the hall to a room where I decided it might be a little better not to have the interruptions of the front desk.
That would be too much reality radio, yeah. Tell us about your first camp experiences or conference experiences growing up. Did you grow up in Nebraska?
I did, as a teenager, grow up in Nebraska and did attend conferences there, but I was actually born in the state of Texas. And my first camp was Buffalo Gap Church Conference Center, not so far from Waco, Texas. And that was a part of the formative time. And when I was I had to be under 10 years old when that happened. And during those years in Waco, I was already thinking church vocations as I was later to become a Presbyterian pastor.
That sort of early Christian outdoor education often has had that effect on folks. I don't personally know how many Catholic priests have ended up that way because of those kind of early experiences, but I imagine that's true in that tradition as well. I've talked with Jewish guests before who talk about various Jewish camps and conferences center throughout the country, and we'll have to see if other callers call in today to tell us about some other experiences. Where else did you go after the Buffalo Gap near Waco?
Well, my family moved to Nebraska, back to their origins, when I was about 11 years old, and I attended church conferences, camps pretty much every summer. But I think one that pops into my mind as you ask that question took place when I was in high school and went off to Doane College for what they called a planning and training workshop. But it was high school people from around the state. And for a guy from a little town of Elgin, Nebraska, it was pretty stimulating to be near these folks from all over the state, from Omaha and Lincoln. And what I remember the most is the questions that we'd never felt that safe to ask about heaven and hell and issues that had kind of been, in our previous experience, sort of clearly defined, and suddenly everything was up for grabs. And that probably was the occasion for the first time in my mind to really be opened up to new thoughts on the matter.
So it was a time for opening people up to be able to ask questions, not sort of feeding them answers.
That's it. there was a safety that you, when you're with people day and night for 4 or 5 days, you tend to build up a little trust that enables you to share what's on your mind without fearing that people will step on you or think less highly of you. That's what happened, by the way, in these hiking courses. We would stop in the middle of a hike for lunch, and those they were comfortable sharing the turning points of their life and what particular cutting-edge issue was most on their mind right now. Before the week was over, we were a pretty solid self-supporting group for each other in the context of safety and also faith sharing.
And how many people would be in that group?
Those groups were limited by the size of the vans that could take them to the points, to 15. So we usually had about 15 to a group, 12 to 15.
And how diverse were the groups in terms of where they were in terms of their spirituality and faith and so forth?
Yes, one thing about Ghost Ranch is it seems to be a place where there's a respect for many traditions. There, some of the events here include Muslim and Jewish leaders. But even this morning, as Philip Newell led us in the weekly Eucharistic worship, it was announced that this was an open table. It doesn't belong to the church. It belongs, he said, to the earth and to all who want to come. And so this is there's a very generous ecumenical interfaith spirit here. Back to the group I would be with, for example, there might be someone strongly evangelical and very centered in traditional language of faith, and there might be someone who's never really been a part of a faith community, as a Christian faith community at all, in the same group. And those folks, I think, found it, as time went on, comfortable to share with each other what their deeper questions were.
Give us a little bit of a sense, particularly listeners who have never been maybe even to that region of the country. What's the size of Ghost Ranch? What's it feel like? What's it look like when you first drive up?
And when I first came here in 1998, I thought I was at the edge of civilization. As I came out from Santa Fe, it felt like there just wasn't anyone else here but me. On Highway 84, it goes from Española up to Chama. By the way, that highway has much more traffic now than it did 11 years ago. But the feeling, you come to the high desert, it's about 6,500 feet here, so it's a little over a mile high, and the first day is going to, for many people, will be one of shortness of breath and awareness of how dry the air is. We've had a lot more rain in this season than they usually have here, and things are pretty green right now, but there's very little humidity, and so that's the physical sensation. But what you come to are these mesas and mountains and gorgeous red rocks that keep changing colors as the sun rises and then moves and then falls. And you get these reverse sunsets where the sun in the west goes down and you see the sky come alive in the east. Last week we had a thunder and lightning show in the afternoon, followed by a beautiful double rainbow that had everyone rushing out of their classrooms and seminars or cabins to see this and to take their pictures.
Taking pictures with their cell phones, of course. I saw some on YouTube, yes.
Cell phones are practically useless here. That's one thing we get away from. We do have a landline that enables you to talk with confidence to me now. But we have very bad, very poor cell phone reception.
It is remote. When you talk about the mesas, the red rocks, the mountains, the climate, the dry air, it's been a place for people to go with breathing disorders and asthmas and allergies and all sorts of things, but partly just for the health effects.
Well, that's what brought Arthur Pack here in the first place. The man who gave this to the church eventually was from Princeton, New Jersey, and he had inherited wealth from his family, his father and his grandfather in the forestry business. He himself was an environmentalist who edited Nature magazine and later Ranger Rick. And that his daughter suffered pneumonia repeatedly, and the doctor advised him to find a drier climate. And he came to New Mexico. To make the story a little shorter, he wound up purchasing a dude ranch that was known already as a ghost ranch. And he made it a very prosperous business and operated it for 20 years. He had some major challenges to overcome, but he had movie stars, Rock Hudson, John Wayne were clients here. Scientists from Los Alamos, where the research on the bomb was going on, after this area was cleared by the FBI, they came here for recreation, R&R, and rest. So he was doing very well, and when he retired, as he approached retirement age in 1955, he didn't like the idea of this 21,000-acre ranch being divided up by his children and friends if he were to pass it on to them. So he offered it to the Santa Fe Diocese of the Catholic Church and then to the Church of the Brethren, his own church, and then to the Boy Scouts of America, who already had Philmont not so far away, and to the YMCA, by the way. And all of these groups, for one reason or another, either had some other thing going or didn't see the promise of such a large, arid desert land turning into what he wanted it to be, a permanent retreat and education center. So he retired, moved to Tucson, became Presbyterian for the first time, and on the back porch of his pastor's house, they chatted about it and called Philadelphia, where the Board of Christian Education was located for the National Church at that time. And that was the beginning of a process that led to completely giving the ranch to the Presbyterian Church for that purpose.
There are always huge expenses in running these kind of operations. Is Ghost Ranch subsidized by the Presbyterian Church or by others?
That's good. That's changed a lot over the years. Initially, in the 50s and 60s, the Presbyterian Church as a national body was thriving with the Faith and Life curriculum that was the church school, and church education materials were being used in, say, 90% of the churches, and some other denominations were using them as well. And national church leaders came out to the ranch. They led conferences. They had teacher training events. And the church, of all the mainline churches, but Presbyterians in particular, have experienced a lot of changes since that time. And while the national church still is very enthusiastic about Ghost Ranch and its other two national conference centers in Montreat and Stony Point, New York, Montreat, North Carolina, well, they're enthused about it, but the funding situation and the different pattern of giving funds and churches channeling it in different directions has created a situation where the covenant relationship that exists between the National Church and Ghost Ranch has changed to the point where, beginning about 2 years ago, there's zero financial support from the National Church for this conference center. There still continue to be some help with accounting and logistics and the guidance and personnel policies and issues and transportation issues. So there's still some in-kind support, but the General Assembly Council, this may be more than some would want to know, but the National Board for the Church has appointed a task force to examine with Ghost Ranch what the relationship will be in the future, and the board of Ghost Ranch itself has requested that it be given a more independent status, that it remain completely Presbyterian and supportive of the goals of the church, but that it have a little more freedom to do its own fundraising and develop its own priorities, and we'll see where that turns out. But that's all described, by the way, on the website, even the points of what that covenant relationship has been and what they're hoping it will be.
And again, the website is ghostranch.org. We're talking with Don Mason here on Keeping the Faith today. He's currently at Ghost Ranch in New Mexico, one of the three camps and conference centers that's supported by the Presbyterian Church in the past. And what's happened with that relationship has been mirrored by many other religious organizations with their camps and conferences centers around the country. So we may have callers who have had that have been on boards and know about that experience and their tradition. Let me give the phone numbers again if people would like to give us a call, 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana. If it's a local call, if it's long distance, 1-800-222-9455. I'm Steve Shoemaker, the frequent host of this program, although for the next 4 weeks I'll be having guest hosts help out here, and I want to thank them in advance for doing that while my recently retired spouse and I are going to be taking a little driving trip east to see some old friends and former students, and so we won't be here, but we're delighted to have the program continue with live guests and a chance for call-ins. We do have a couple of callers waiting. Let's go to line number one. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith.
Yes, hi. My kids were members of Troop 104 in Urbana, and they went to Philmont. And I remember there was a Ghost Ranch trip at the end of the 10-day Philmont trip. So a lot of Champaign-Urbana Boy Scouts end up seeing Ghost Ranch. Just want to pass that on.
Ah, thank you for sharing that. Don, could you hear that?
Yes, yes. We're not that far from Philmont. It's a little higher in the mountains east of here, the Sangre de Cristo Mountains, so that I've never been there, but I understand it's a little more green.
And we have another caller on line number two. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith.
Hi, Don. This is Shai. What a nice to hear your voice.
Well, hi, Shai.
Shai and Madhu and Shaguna listening.
Yes, good.
Yeah, hopefully, I mean, we can come sometime to Ghost Ranch when you are there.
We would love that.
A really wonderful program. Thank you, Steve, for having him on the program.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Don, you might explain why some local listeners know you well and want to say hello.
Well, yes, I had the privilege to live in Urbana for the last 17 years up until about a year and a half ago now, when I retired from having served the First Presbyterian Church there in Urbana.
So said Palo Alto.
I almost said Palo Alto, where I also served a church. God, you know, when you get to this age, you start to make those kinds of errors. That's part of retirement, I guess. But we relocated to California in about a year ago now. And part of our transition time into this part of our lives was to take advantage of a hope we'd had for a long time, and that's to have an extended time at Ghost Ranch. Maybe I could say what we're doing here.
Oh, please do.
If you like, Donna, my wife, and also known to a lot of Urbana-Champaign folks, serves as a docent in the Piedra Lumbra Visitor and Education Center. It's out on the highway. It's part of Ghost Ranch, but it's on Highway 84. It was started by Arthur Pack and the ranch, but it was eventually deeded to the Forest Service, who had a living museum there, which eventually closed in 1998. And Ghost Ranch now has leased that facility about 3 years ago and reopened it as a visitor center. And Donna is there with there's exhibits on Georgia O'Keeffe, on the Penrolls and geology of the area, the natural history. And she helps people that visit there to find their way around and answers their questions. One of the frequent questions she says is, where's the bathroom? And I'm at the front desk myself here, about 2 or 3 miles away from where she works. I'm at what they call the front desk in the main office, where anyone who wants to come in and have meals or lodging or go camping or hiking or horseback riding or whatever, they come to there to get signed up. And some people describe me as the one who smiles while he takes your money. But it involves all kinds of things. If there's an injury on anywhere on the camp, it tends to come to our attention here, and sometimes we've had to have a rescue mission. Today I got a call that there'd been a death in the family of someone who's on their way here, and it resulted in a series of conversations about how to help these people adjust their plans and get back to where they need to be.
Tell us the various ways people can take advantage of Ghost Ranch and the various courses and classes and opportunities. People can come and stay for a week or longer. Do they live there? Do they eat there? Can they bring a motorhome? Can they bring a tent? What's possible?
That's right. It's quite a diverse operation. It's a year-round operation. The office I work in is closed only 2 days a year, and that would be Thanksgiving Day and Christmas Day. So there are programs all the time, and anyone of any inclination can stop by for bed and breakfast. That's one thing that my office does. But more importantly, there's a catalog. It's all on the website as well, but there is a written catalog, and if anyone would call us or email us, we'd be happy to send the written catalog as well as you see what's on the online. But the catalog reveals that there are seminars that are generally 1 week in length. They start on a Monday evening and conclude on a Sunday morning. And this being a Sunday, we're having about 350 guests leave the ranch today. And tomorrow on Monday, a new 350 or so, sometimes as many as 400, will arrive. And there'll be an orientation for the whole group on Monday evening. And then they'll be divided up into 12 to 15 different seminars during the week. Some come for rest and recreation, and that's fine. Some come for volunteer service, and they pay half the cost that others pay, and devote half the day each day to volunteer service. The role of volunteers is pretty important here. And then the others are taking classes. Classes starting tomorrow include yoga for well-being, community singing, outdoor adventures, which is like a ropes course, and boating on the Abiquiu Lake. Your prophetic voice, Bill Timaeus, will be here from Kansas City, writing to repair the world.
He's been a guest on Keeping the Faith two or three times.
I wouldn't be surprised. That sounds like him. A New Harmony, I forget the rest of that title. That's what Phil and Allie Newell from Scotland will be leading that again this week. The Service Corps, the Art of Bead Weaving. Then there's a whole series of art classes. Art Welding, which always is sold out months in advance. Exploration of firing techniques for pottery, exploring pastels, handmade tiles, an introduction to silk painting, basketry, watercolor, black and white photography, stained glass, and stone, shell, and silver. Those are the seminars starting tomorrow.
Quite a lineup.
It is. That's pretty typical. There'll be some on the outdoors, some on peace, theology, justice, some on the arts, and that's sort of how it works. One other area to mention, while it's on my mind, I guess, is that the Ghost Ranch Board made a commitment to do a 10-year series on change we can believe in, and it's basically related to the creation and how we care for the world. And that Larry Rasmussen is one of the leaders of that. He's done a lot of spirituality and ecology writing. But that took place the week before last. And every evening, when I had the opportunity to be off work, I joined them for an experience of finding ways to ritualize our connection with the earth. And that Change We Can Believe In series has grown from a small cadre to now it's about 40 to 50 people, and they commit themselves to return each year for 10 years so that there can be some real connection with what's going on in their own communities with what they're discovering in that series.
So that's something that's having an effect in many different communities as those people spread out after that time together.
That's the hope. And I think Philip Newell says the same thing, that if we can take this enthusiasm for our oneness in the earth and with the Creator back to our community, that where it's a little more challenging to see that so clearly, then we will have truly had a effective course.
We're talking with Don Mason by phone in New Mexico from Ghost Ranch, a conference center, a national conference center that has had close ties to the Presbyterian Church for about the last 50 years or so, but is open to people of many different religious traditions and has been a place of beauty and excitement for people like Georgia O'Keeffe, who died in, I guess, 86, my notes say, after living almost 100 years, 50 of them there at Ghost Ranch, many of her paintings that people have seen in museums focus on scenes and items and landscapes and cloudscapes that she experienced out in that high desert area, 6,500 feet high, you were saying. Don Mason is a Presbyterian minister. He is, I guess you're sort of volunteering there. Is that accurate? Or do you?
That's it. Yeah, the ranch provides board and room. And,
okay.
And we're here without a stipend we work 40 hours a week. I told someone I wanted to sit down and write a letter of thanks to all the administrative assistants I've had over the years.
Now you're doing that, yes.
Because I didn't realize how challenging their work was and how important it was to my well-being.
This is a live call-in program here on AM 580, WILL-AM, Illinois Public Media. It also found on HD2 and HD3, 90.9 FM. If you'd like to call in, we're eager to have people join our conversation. 333-9455 reaches several local lines, and our engineer, Kyle Crow, will answer the phone and put you in the queue to talk to our guest. If it's a long-distance call, 1-800-222-9455. And we have another caller on line number one. Yes, go ahead.
Hi, Don. I was privileged to spend some time with you a short time last spring. And I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit about the library facilities that you have at the camp.
I'd be glad to do that. One of the buildings on this campus, it's one of the historic buildings. It was built by the family of Robert Wood Johnson in the 1930s as a guest house for his family. Those are the Johnson & Johnson pharmaceutical folks. It's a two-story adobe building, and they were friends of the Lindberghs as well. He also knew Arthur Pack and landed. He used this alfalfa field in the center of the ranch as his landing strip. And they were influenced by Lindbergh to build it, a two-story building. It's the only two-story building on the entire ranch. Anyway, it's now preserved and used as a library, and it's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It has a good collection of material from the Southwest. In fact, there's it's one of the leading Southwest collections in the area. That there's a separate room for that, some of those materials that are considered quite valuable. But it also has a recent development. It's a hotspot for your computers if you want internet access with your laptop. So it's a very popular place. It's open all night, and people are in and out all the time. Clergy, like myself, on sabbatical leave, have found it to be pretty good on contemporary biblical and theological materials and commentaries, And it's not unusual to see pastors of different traditions. There was an Episcopal priest here recently who I persuaded to share with me in leading the Eucharistic worship one Sunday. He was just here for his own studies course, and he found that library to be a good resource for him.
I want to get back to some of the other features there at the ranch, but I realize one thing that we kind of got away from was can people bring motorhomes? Can they tent?
I didn't ever answer that. Yeah. In addition to there's a wide range of housing available, from dorm style to rooms with a private bath, rather modern rooms. There's two brand new rooms that buildings with modern facilities. But we also have a campground that has about, I think it's around 70 or 80 sites, some of which are equipped for hookups for electricity and water and sewage, and most of them are tent camping sites. But people can camp here. The hookups are not kept open in the winter because of the primitive plumbing is too close to the surface and would freeze up if we kept it open. So for tent camping, it's okay year-round. But for hookups, it would be limited, I'd say, from April to November. April, maybe to the end of October.
Tell us about the archaeology that's been such an important part of Ghost Ranch and the dinosaurs.
Well, that's it. During the era that it was a dude ranch, they found a coelophysis, a complete skeleton of a small early dinosaur named coelophysis, and that caused quite a stir. They've now taken 20 containers of bones out of that one quarry, and they've built a museum around one of those finds, and you'll see a dinosaur excavation going on in process in the paleontology museum here. And there's an anthropology museum adjacent to that. But that that became the state fossil of New Mexico, and scientists from around the world, really, but all over this country, have taken an interest. There's also archaeological digs going on annually as part of the program here in a second site. And then about 3 years ago, this man that I did my hiking with, John Hayden, was leading a group down the arroyo. It was a time when the National Forest were off limits because of fire danger, and we were not allowed to go hiking there. So all the hiking was on the ranch, so we were just going down. This group, I wasn't with them, was just going down the arroyo toward the lake when he used his hiking stick to poke a little bit on the side of the arroyo, and a bone dropped out. And they named that the Hayden Quarry. And today, just this summer, there have been scientists from the University of Texas, from Harvard, from Salt Lake City. They've been collaborating. They've found a jawbone that was from what they call a prior to the, it's an unclassified animal before the dinosaur. It's kind of opening up a new era of discoveries. Apparently, this was the geology here. I'm not the one to explain it very helpfully, but there was a huge lake where the water just kind of swept through this area and left the bones of animals in the wake, and this would qualify as kind of the site of one of those valleys. And they have now opened three discovery areas. They've done a plunge area, a dig deep in to show that these bones go down many layers, and the research will go on for a long time. But that jawbone I'm talking about was about 8 inches long. And it's visible in the paleontology museum here now. They had a staff hike out to this so-called Hayden Quarry, where we would see the armor, as they call it, the back of some early animal of the dinosaur era, where the back of it looks a little bit like a turtle, but it's actually, they call it armor. It's a very solid thing. And here are people that are as young as 12 years old and as old as 80-something who've come here for a week of Ghost Ranch seminar on paleontology. out there finding things themselves under the guidance of these scientists.
And apparently having no trouble believing in science and geology and paleontology and evolution, and also being at least some of them people of faith.
I think the this is a place where the science and theology have come into a conversation with each other in a way that helps us appreciate the scripture not being the story of creation in scripture, not intending to demonstrate scientific analysis so much as a firm theological conviction that this was created in an orderly way, and it was good.
Information about Ghost Ranch can be found online at ghostranch.org. Folks who would like to call for more information may use this following number if you want to pick up a pen, 505-685-4333. And if you'd like to call WILL here on this live call-in show, the numbers are 333-9455. In area code 217, if it's a long-distance call, do use our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. And we have another caller, this time on line one. Yes, go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for this program. I was curious, you mentioned a plethora of very interesting courses that are taught. Who teaches the courses, and how are they organized? Thank you.
Appreciate the call.
Sure. That's an excellent question. There, the registrar and the program, there's a man named Jim Baird who is the overall coordinator of the program at Ghost Ranch. I guess I haven't mentioned there's actually two locations for Ghost Ranch. Jim made me think of it because his office is at the Santa Fe location. We have a building, a single building, located very close to the plaza in Santa Fe that was historically belonged to the Presbyterian Church for other purposes. And a few years ago, it was unified with Ghost Ranch Abiquiu. So we have Ghost Ranch Santa Fe, Ghost Ranch Abiquiu, and the program is intertwined, and the catalog and the website all relate to both campuses. But back to your question. The courses, which I think is one of the most important things we do, are these seminars. The director of the camp and the management team give a lot of thought to the themes and how this is done. In a nutshell, anyone that wishes to propose a course can do so. I hand out application sheets quite often at the front desk to people who've been here for a while and have a particular skill in the arts, perhaps, or even in one of the other areas. You fill out an application. We can send one to anyone that asks, and then that goes into the hopper of the team that work together. And this year and last year, they've tried some new theme approaches. For example, we had Family Week last week, where all the courses, or at least many of the courses, were intergenerational, where the family stayed together the whole time. That was a new thought, and there was a good response to it. There was one group of grandparents and grandchildren together, and the parents weren't necessarily here. But another week we had Senior High Week, which was a new idea here, and another week focused primarily on the arts. So the theme weeks are you can see that in the catalog taking shape, but they're not exclusively so. There will be some exceptions almost every week. Basically, that's the process. People that have an interest or have been recruited to have an interest will be added to the mix, and then they'll follow up with phone calls and reference checks and decide if that fits the overall mission of the ranch, which is to become a retreat, an education center that grounds its life and program in reverence, hospitality for all people, and respect for creation. But it has to be consistent with that goal.
I noticed that there was a course taught there on Islam that I've taught a similar course at the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute here at the University of Illinois this last spring, and so I was interested that there was a similar course at Ghost Ranch.
You know, that makes me think of how the high desert seems to attract people to retreat centers for many of the faiths. We have just 15 miles from Ghost Ranch office, you'll find Dar es Salaam, which is a large education center for the American Muslims. And there's a mosque and a smaller mosque nearby. We have the other direction, 13 miles out on a very quaint gravel and dirt road, the Christ in the Desert Monastery, which is a Benedictine monastery. Near the town of Canyonis, we have the St. Michael's Skeet, which is a tiny monastery of the Russian Orthodox Church. In the city of Espanola, there's 200 or 300 people of the Sikh community who have come there to form a community. So that, combined with the rich Roman Catholic heritage of northern New Mexico and the Penitentes lay movement among men, among the brothers in the Catholic Church, means that there are many religious sites here. And by the way, that hiking course we took that I used to lead would hike into these holy sites and often share in the prayers and in conversation and fellowship with people in those respective places.
We have another caller, this time on line number one. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Steve and Don. I remember the time when there was a great deal of publicity for a college student summer volunteer program at Ghost Ranch. Is that still continuing?
I'm happy to say that is still the case, Dale. There are 30 college staff here still, and they are an integral part of the program. One of the people I work with at the front desk is a college student from Kansas. Next Sunday afternoon, I've been invited to lead, I think it's 31 people altogether, but I think 28 of them are college staff, out on a hike that will take us to some ancient Indian ruins, Native American ruins, that are largely untouched. They have not been excavated. They're protected by the National Forest Service, and it's about a 10-mile or maybe an 8-mile hike into them. But so the college staff who are intensely involved in the program for children and youth during the week, but they also work in the kitchen and wranglers and the horses and on the ranch and in the trading post. They're all over the place. The ranch couldn't handle its life without the college staff. About a year ago or two, they had a college staff reunion, and hundreds of people came back. And many of the people I meet now that are volunteers or on the board got acquainted with Ghost Ranch as part of the college staff. They get a small stipend and their board and room, and it's an important part of how we operate now. By the way, there's a January term, where during kind of the off season they offer a course where many universities and colleges have time available in January between semesters. And these students can receive credit from many schools for taking courses at Ghost Ranch.
And, of course, college students have enjoyed that experience at many camps and conference centers all around the country, many traditions. Don, we're down to our last 4 or 5 minutes.
Okay.
Let's talk just a little bit about what you just mentioned, the three cultures that are represented there in terms of Anglo and Hispanic and Native American, how that affects what happens at Ghost Ranch?
That's such an important part of our context. By the way, a new focus this year that's brand new here is what they call Youth Service Corps. These are high school youth who come here for a week and spend most of their time off the ranch doing service in neighboring communities, sometimes an Indian pueblo or sometimes in a Hispanic community. But those cultures have come together in New Mexico, and I've been fascinated by the history of this region in such a way that is quite intriguing. And Ghost Ranch made a niche for itself. I may not have time to tell the whole story, but in the 1960s, there was a man named Tirena led a movement to reclaim the land deeds for the Hispanic people from the Americans that they thought had deprived them. And there was a considerable commotion. They took over a courthouse. They set prisoners free. They took over a national forest site. And one day they had a caravan into Ghost Ranch, allegedly with the idea of taking over this ranch and reclaiming it for what they thought would be the rightful owners. And that was in 1968. And Jim Hall, the director, invited the folks into Convocation Hall. They sat down and talked for hours. He served lemonade and cookies. And the conversation went on. It turned out a lot of the people were supporters of Ghost Ranch that were in the caravan. But the leader wanted to talk alone with Jim, and he said, no, this conversation will be out in the open. And at the end of the day, a plan emerged that Jim Hall, who was executive director for 30 years, eventually put into place, where there was a big land swap where the Ghost Ranch deeded some property to the National Forest Service, which became that museum I talked about earlier. The National Forest Service released some deeds for some controversial sites that were claimed by local ranchers in exchange for that land. So that land swap, I think, permanently endeared Ghost Ranch to the neighborhood here. And now the children from the neighboring towns come in for swim lessons on summer mornings, and many of the local people are employed here. And it takes volunteers like ourselves to make it possible for those employees to have good benefits and maternity. I'm replacing a young woman who's on maternity leave. So I'm kind of getting beyond the question, but I think there's a lot more that could be said about the coming together of the Native Americans, the Mexican, Spanish, and conquistadors, the people who came before Plymouth to this land, and then the onslaught of the Americans. Quite a group. And Ghost Ranch, I think, has a good mix of all of those, except outside of some of the teachers in our seminars, we don't have a lot of presence of Native Americans right here on the site.
It's an amazing setting, both culturally and historically and geologically, and we thank you for giving us such a good word picture of that particular camp and conference center, Ghost Ranch. People can learn more about it at ghostranch.org. We've been talking with Don Mason, a Presbyterian minister who in his retirement is volunteering at Ghost Ranch along with his wife, Donna. I'm Steve Shoemaker. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith. Next week, as I mentioned earlier, Professor Don Nolan will be our guest host. Next week, he'll be talking with Professor Jason Mirick from Parkland College about issues in teaching world religion. The following week, the topic will be the new atheists. After that, international friends with our guest Laura Wetzel. Those are some of the programs coming up here in the future on AM 580, Keeping the Faith. Thank you for listening.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.